everybody. I am Doc Crandall, and I am an alcoholic. And by the grace of God, I'm sober today. You know, this is the sixth one that I've been to, and I've been kind of after them, and they finally agreed to let me say something here.
Now you won't go anywhere.
Get him on a leash, and he can't go anywhere.
I feel good today. You know, rather than take a lot of time on an introduction and so forth, leading up to this, I'd like to get into it so that we can open it up to the floor and get a few comments from you fellas. As some of you know, I made my first AA meeting in 1951. I didn't get sober until 1967. That's a 16-year period. During that 16-year period, I had a lot of dryness. I don't think, as looking back at it now, that I had any too much sobriety at all. But during that period, I was determined that I was going to show you fellas that here was one guy that could make it without God. Not only make it without God, but I could make it with the 12 steps, you know, I kind of took them cafeteria style. I could use a little bit of this one and a little bit of that one, but as far as using and studying the 12 steps or using them in my daily living, I just didn't want any part of that. Of course, as you all know and realize today, that when you are a non-believer, there isn't too much in the 12 steps. It's a spiritual program. During that 16-year period, in fact, there was one time that I had 3 years and 8 months without taking a drink. That all I had done during that time was put the cork in the jug and set it up on the shelf. I had done nothing at all about this up here, about turning it around, my attitude towards life, towards people, towards myself, towards God, towards daily living. Stayed pretty much the same as it did while I was still had my nose in the sauce. You know, they have an old saying. It's kind of corny and trite, but it's so true. That when you take a drunk son of a bitch and sober him up, you got a dry son of a bitch. And that's just about where I was. During that period of time, I was over in Texas. Dan, come on in. Did you do anything about getting the tea? Thank you, sir. During that period of time, I was over in Texas, and I was a traveling drunk, and I moved around a lot. But during the 16 years, when I had this 3 years and 8 months without taking a drink, I was over in Texas. And, you know, they talk about doing 90 meetings in 90 days. During that 3 years and 8 months, I probably very, very seldom ever missed a day without going to a meeting. In other words, I do think that it's possible for a guy to stay dry just through the fellowship itself. And as far as getting any kind of peace of mind, serenity, and the things that I enjoy today, there wasn't much chance of that. But I went to a lot of meetings. I enjoyed the fellowships, you know. The guys in here are the same guys that I used to hang around with in the bar. You're my kind of people, and I liked it. And I could give lip service to an awful lot of things. I gave lip services to what the 12 steps were and what they meant to me, and was very phony. Had no intentions of using them. I knew that they were divinely inspired, or felt maybe they were, and heard that they were. And I was so glad that you had dummies had them to work with, because you needed them. And the sad part of that is that that was just as real as could be to me up here. I've seen a lot of people come in and out of AA that had the same thought that I did, that possibly you could get this thing by osmosis, by rubbing shoulders with the people and not doing anything about it yourself. I was that way. I didn't want to take the time and bother, I guess. You know, I wanted to get rid of all my problems and troubles that I was having in my life. And I wanted help. And I wanted help from you people. But you damn well better give it to me under my terms, or I didn't want it. You know, it's a sad thing when you want help and need help and are offered help and are not able to accept it. When they talk about alcoholic insanity, that to me is alcoholic insanity at its highest degree and working very well. But I landed in Atlanta in 1967. I had just come off from this period that I was talking about of 3 years and 8 months. I had to leave that part of the country over in Texas, or thought I had to leave. I did leave. And you see, the sad part of it is, when you're in a situation as I was, and with my type of thinking, a non-believer, I had nothing of my own to take with me. I was staying sober simply through the association and the fellowship. I am an alcoholic. I'm wired like an alcoholic. I waddle and swim like an alcoholic, and I am an alcoholic. And it was just a question of time, and I had to come drunk. That was my game, drinking, alcoholism, alcoholic. That's what they're talking about. So anyway, I left there, and I was gone about 6 weeks, and I finally took a drink, and I stayed drunk for 7 years. You know, there was a time during that whole 16 years that I could do what I call kind of controlled drinking. There was a time early in there when if I had to be somewhere on Tuesday, had an appointment, I could take care of it, and I would be there on Tuesday. I might be hung over, but I would be there. Then as the progression set in, maybe instead of Tuesday, I wouldn't get sober until Friday. But I could get sober and stay sober for a period of time and do a few things that I had to do. And I thought that I was having the best of both worlds, I was able to halfway control my drinking. But on this time when I left Texas and I got drunk, and I stayed drunk for 7 years. And it wasn't just occasionally, that was around-the-clock drinking. I was drunk every day. I could control my drinking to a certain extent, space them out on any given day if I had to do something, but it was an everyday drunk. The last 3 years of that period, I hardly got out of the motel. And it was sad. And I made up my mind during that three-year period, particularly during the last three years, that I was one of these people that just couldn't make it, that they talk about in How It Works, that I couldn't put it together, and I was resigned to the fact. I decided that I was going to die on Skid Row, that there was no other way for it to happen. I had never been a rich man, but I had been capable of keeping a fairly constant cash flow, and I knew there was going to come a day when that had stopped. You talk about alcoholic insanity. My solution to that problem of, and I had this tremendous fear of dying on Skid Row. But my solution to that fear was that when I went in to buy toothpaste, instead of buying a tube of toothpaste, I'd buy a case. I'd buy a case of toothbrushes, shaving lotion. I'd buy by the case. I had my trunk, my car filled with that kind of crap. Alcoholic insanity. You know, I thought if I kept my teeth clean, that I'd never wind up on Skid Row. And it was real to me, just as real as could be, just as real as could be. I had a tremendous time with this insanity thing. Finally, an old boy in a meeting one time told me, he said, you know, he said, the guy sitting at the end of the bar, and he's paying $3 a shot for booze and pouring it down and trying to act sober. That's a form of insanity. It's impossible to do. So finally, a few of these things seeped into me. But anyway, I had my last drink. I was down in Fort Lauderdale. I had checked into this place in November, expecting to stay for a week or two. And the following April, I'm still there. And all of a sudden, one day I got up and I didn't drink. And I had several jugs sitting on my dresser. I had part of a case of booze in the trunk of my car. And again, I wasn't rich, but I did have money with me. And I took my last drink, and I went around bragging about that for a long period of time, until I finally decided that I had nothing to do with it. That was when the man up there said, well, this kid has had enough, let's do something with him. And when you talk about, you know, hangover and becoming ill, I would take a glass of water and throw it up. I couldn't hold anything. I was crawling on my hands and knees to the John. I've been drunk for 7 years. And all of a sudden, I take my last drink. The maids would come in and say, well, we're going to call a doctor. We're going to call an ambulance. And I got myself into this, and I'll get myself out. You know, I know. Alcoholic insanity to the nth degree. I would wake up and my tongue would be chewed up and hallucinating and DTs and the whole works. You know, I used to have the prettiest girl that I ever saw. She had the prettiest face that I ever seen. She used to come and sit on the edge of my bed. And she was always nude. Didn't have anything on. And she'd just sit there and she'd look at me. And she had one problem. She had long folds of skin that hung down from her jaws here. And it hung down far enough that it covered her breasts. And I thought, well, if I could nudge that old bitch, and maybe that skin would move and I could see her breasts, you know. And I'd nudge her and she'd move and the damn skin would move with her. And I'd throw a pillow at her and she'd go away. And I'd wake up and she'd be sitting there looking at me again. We have a hell of a lot of fun with this booze thing, you know. But, you know, Ed talks about sex and our obsession with sex and what a hoss I was. You know, I always thought I was. Here, I'm dying. I'm chewing my tongue and having hell, but I want to see your boobs, you know. Finally, it got to where I could get around a little bit, and I'd lay out by the pool, and people would come by and say, hi, Doc, how are you doing? And hell, I didn't know anybody. And it was driving me nuts. So I thought, well, hell, I got to get out of here. And that's when I packed up and I came to Atlanta. And I wasn't a hell of a lot smarter than I had been before. I started making meetings as soon as I arrived in Atlanta. I get in on a Saturday night, and I wound up at NABA, and they didn't have a meeting there on Saturday night. But anyway, I made arrangements with some folks that was there to go to a meeting the next day, and they took me, and I started going to meetings every day. And I'd get up. I was living in a motel not too far from Napa, and I'd get up in the morning and get dressed, and I'd go to the club, and I'd stay there all day and go to a meeting at night and come back there until they closed. And I never had anybody offer me a drink in the Napa club, so the result of it was that I stayed sober. But after all I had gone through, I'm still back in the same old spot that I was before. I thought that the 12 steps was written for you people. I was a non-believer. I didn't think he was there, and I was very certain that if he was there, that he didn't want any part of me. And back in that same vicious circle that I was in before, one thing that I did during that period of time that was right, and I asked, that was when I asked a man to be my sponsor. A lot of you folks in this room might have known Jim Pippin. Jim died 6 years ago. I don't think he would mind me breaking his anonymity in an AA meeting. He was a very powerful man, very persuasive man. Jim was able to start pressing buttons on me that had never been pressed before. But still, I was still going to a lot of meetings, and Jim caught me out in the parking lot one night, and I was back. You see, a bad thing happened to me when I first got into Atlanta, and every night I was just so filled. You know, they talk about gratitude. I was so filled with gratitude that, man, I'd made another day without drinking when I'd go to bed at night. But then, you see, a bad thing started to happen to me. My health started to return. And it just seemed to work on a scale. It's the healthier I got, the less gratitude I had. Then I was getting back into control. I was losing all my gratitude for being. Then, when the gratitude goes, then I started bitching again. And the main thing that I was bitching about, you dirty so-and-sos weren't doing what I wanted you to do. And when you did do it, it was too damn late, you know. And that's been my problem all my life. My drinking problem, I'm thoroughly convinced of what it tells us in the big book, that it's just a symptom of what's wrong with me. I didn't know how to live with people. I didn't know how to accept you folks as you are. The people that I did accept, you know, they always had a couple of warts up here that I wanted to put around on the back of their neck. I wanted to change them just a little bit. I wanted to do something to them to make them different from what they are now. And I wanted to do that because I knew that they needed it. They ought to listen to me, you know. And you folks were doing that to me again. And finally, and I was white-knuckling it. I was going through this rationalization of how it could be different. Here for 16 years, I've been through that path. In and out, in and out. And each time I knew it was going to be different. And it always was. It was worse. But Jim caught me out in the parking lot one night, and he had realized that I was white-knuckling, and the hell that I was going through, and the fight. It was just a daily fight to get through a day without drinking. Because you people were just getting worse all the damn time, you know. And it was so real to me, just as real as could be. And that's when Jim told me a number of things. But a couple of things I want to relate to you. He said, "Doc, when you go back to your room tonight, there's some things I want you to do." He said, "Number one, I want you to take 4 hours, not 3 hours, not five. I want you to take 4 hours. You know, when Bill was saying that I didn't suggest too many things, I come by it honestly. This is the way Jim operated. He said, I want you to take 4 hours, and I want you to take these 12 steps and break them down and see how it might be possible if you could use these things and apply them in your daily life. Not the way I do, not the way Pete or Alice does, but see if there isn't some way that you can't use these things in your daily living. Then before you go to sleep tonight, you thank God that you were sober today. And when you get up tomorrow morning, the first thing that you do, not the second thing, the first thing that you do, said by the time you get in the John, get that thing in your hand, you've had a bad thought. You do this before you get down on your knees. Then he said, I want you to take another 4 hours after sleeping on it, and you restudy these steps. Finally, after a lot of haggling, I agreed. I thought, well, I told him, yes, I'll study the 12 steps. But as far as getting on his knees and thanking God, that's hypocritical, Jim. You don't want me to be hypocritical, do you? You know, a hypocrite? What are you trying to do to me here? And that's when Jim laid it on me. He said, look, I make it very easy for you. He said, you either do it or get another sponsor. That's all. So finally, I agreed to do it. And when I studied those 12 steps, the 4 hours at night, keep in mind that I had been around AA for 16 years. I'd made hundreds and hundreds of meetings. But it was a revelation to me what was in those 12 steps and what they might mean to me and how I could use them. And finally, I did say a quick thanks and went to sleep. And then the next morning, I did get down on my knees. And even though I had been and was at that moment a non-believer, there was something about putting my body in that position that did something to me. I didn't have any bells ring. I didn't get warm. I didn't have any flashes or anything of that sort. But there was something about putting my body in that position that brought out a little bit of self-honesty. Probably the first honest feelings that I'd had since I was an adult. By the way, I've continued to do that every day since, and I've never had a compulsion to take a drink since then. But anyway, I did restudy these 12 steps. And I continued each morning to get down on my knees, even though I was a non-believer. And I can tell you today, when I introduce myself as being Doc Crandall, that I'm an alcoholic, and by the grace of God, I'm sober this morning. I mean just that. I don't mean anything else. I mean just that. I do believe that today that God works through you people. And I continue to do it, as I say, each morning. 2 or 3, 4 weeks later, I don't know exactly how long it was, it finally dawned on me. Man, I've lost this desire to take a drink. Man, that's freedom for this alcoholic. When I can go 24 hours right today, I quite often say, man, when I get up in the morning and brush my teeth and don't gag, I know he's there and everything's going to be all right. But to go 24 hours, an alcoholic, and not wanting to take a drink, I'm not saying about taking one, but not wanting to take one, that is freedom. That is freedom. So I found that there was a number of things that I had to do, and that to me I think is so important. I had to start believing. Now my belief, my trust in God, I didn't get it from reading a book. I didn't get it from going to church. There's nothing wrong with going to church. I think it's wonderful. I just am one of the people that has never gotten with that. But my trust in God has come from what has happened to me. What has happened to me? I had to start believing right down in my gut, and I did start believing right down in my gut, that as long as I continue, and I don't care what set of circumstances come about in any given day, my grandmother might die, my wife might leave me, I cut off my arm, no matter what happens, that if I do tomorrow morning what I did this morning, that I don't have to worry about taking a drink or even having a thought about taking a drink. Pardon me. Then I determined after that, I say determined, I was told by you people, and started to soak into me, that there was a number of things that I had to believe. I had to believe right down in my gut that I am an alcoholic. I'm not a half-assed alcoholic. I'm all the way an alcoholic. You see, all these things, when they talk about the half measures and how it works, I was a half-measured kid. I could partially believe it. I could believe it maybe today, and tomorrow I wouldn't quite believe it. And then something would happen the next day and I'd be a little further off center. But I had to come around to believing right down in my gut, and I think this is so important, and I think it's passed over by a lot of people. I think they think, well, maybe I did drink too much. Maybe occasionally I got drunk and my wife, she got mad at me. But as far as being an alcoholic, I'm not so sure. You know, it halfway tells me in the traditions that we were talking about today that all I've got to have is a desire to stop drinking. They couch that in very simple, easy language. But that wasn't good enough for me. I needed to stop drinking when I was 17. I don't think that I was drinking alcoholically at that time. I had to believe right down in here that I'm an alcoholic. Man, when I got that under my belt, then there's some other things that I could believe. You know, I'd mentioned earlier in my experience, and where I thought the 12 steps was beautiful, and I was glad that you guys had them to work with. But again, I had to believe that, man, these 12 steps, you know, that's the only thing that we've got that is different from any other organization. There's a hell of a lot of people that have gone to church, they've gone to psychiatrists, hospitals, whatever, and they've gotten sober, isolated cases, singly, and so forth. But this is the only thing in the history of man that has helped people en masse. And the only thing that we've got that is different is the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. And I had to come around to believing right down in my gut that this 12 steps, the AA program, man, this was it. This is what is going to make me well. I didn't want to go back into that 16-year period of trying to prove that I could do it without believing the 12 steps and without God. You know, you hear people that come in now and they say, well, I've got a new man with me today. Don't talk about God. I'm afraid he's going to leave us. Man, he's going to leave us if he doesn't get with God. Thank you. I guess the message that I'm trying to purvey here is that for so many, many years, I was the half-measured kid. And it finally come around to a point where I had to believe it with all of my heart. Because, man, I am an alcoholic. I'm wired like an alcoholic. I'm going to be an alcoholic all my life. I love the line that I heard at the old-timers meeting here at Nevin a week or two ago. Man with 35 years, and they asked him how he got to be an old timer. He said, "Don't drink and don't die." You know. And I'd like to become an old timer. And I've got to continue to believe I've got to believe. My choice. I've got to believe in God and what God has done for me. Be grateful for that. I've got to believe that I am an alcoholic. That I'm not a halfway alcoholic. You know, as long as I thought that Milton was a little worse than I was, then that set me up. I had an excuse that I could go out and drink. I wasn't quite as bad as he was, you know. What difference does it make how bad he or I was? I had to believe right down in here that I was an alcoholic. I had to believe that the AA, the 12 steps and the 12 traditions and the fellowship of AA was the thing that could make me well. And as long as I continue to believe that, it's been fun for me. It's been fun, you know, quite often, and you people have seen it too. And there's many, many of them out there, people with 5 years or more, 10, 15, 20 years. You very, very seldom see them at a meeting. I hope it never happens to me. Because in the same breath, there's a lot of those boys out there and gals that are sober, but there's a lot of them out there too. That just slowly drifted away from AA and wind up getting their nose back into the sod.
The original master recording cut off at this point.